Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And I do it for an audience of entrepreneurs who are looking to hear the stories of how other people grew their companies so they could get some ideas that they could bring back to their businesses. And a lot of times when I interview my guests, if you've heard my interviews for any amount of time, you know that I spend a lot of time researching them. And often when I research these days, it involves going into freaking Instagram, looking to see if they have any personal photos of them so that I can use it for conversation, if not in the interview, then before the interview. And the reason I say freaking Instagram is because I will hit the stories tab, the stories section at the top, and I'll just get lost in it. And before I know it, it's like 10 minutes of me doing nothing meaningful. And if you're listening to me, you probably have had a similar experience online with social media. Well, today's guest, Moti Cohen, has said, you know, why don't websites have that kind of compelling content? Why is it that they're still using the top-down scroll and read text and occasionally see a photo? And if they're really trying to pizzazz the site up, they might throw a video often that autoplays and often with commercials. Because it's got to be a better way. And so he took what you're familiar with now in social media, the story format and other formats, and he made it available to content creators that they could put it up on their site. And I invited him here to talk about whether it's working or not and talk about how he got publishers to use it and so on. The company is called Apster. It's a plug-and-play platform for creation and distribution of mobile-friendly interactive content. You might have seen it on other sites and just didn't know that Moti and Apster were the people and company behind it. This interview where we'll find out how he did it is sponsored by TopTal for hiring developers and HostGator for hosting your website. Oh, and Apster will work with HostGator, but we'll get to that in a moment. Moti, good to have you here. What's the revenue? How big are you guys now?
First of all, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. So the revenue, we just, I think, hit 10 million in revenue.
10 million last year, 2019.
Yeah, very close to it.
So for many people, 10 million would be okay. I had a sense from talking to you before the interview started that it's not okay for you. It's not enough. What are you aiming for?
So I think the absolute number by itself, not enough, because like I said, I want to be profitable as a company. I think more than anything else, I want to have the freedom and the feeling, I would say, that I'm controlling my own destiny. And there's only one way to do that as a business, not necessarily just as a startup, is when you have a valid business model scaling with the right unit economy that actually make profit. So we are not far from it, very close to it. So for us, it's like becoming a reality. And I started to speak about it like almost 5 years ago. And now is we're really close to it. So to the point, if you ask me, I don't see us stopping before at least earning money, and then hopefully earning a lot.
Okay, so there's no fixed number, but it's just you got to be profitable, and the more the better.
Yeah, I think I'm a very much first thing first. Before I'm jumping to say I would like to be profitable with $50 million a year, or 100, or half a billion, or a billion, I want to be profitable with $1.
Got it. By the way, I'm hearing some background noise. Are you in a private room?
Yeah, I will make sure I am in private room, but I make sure that make everybody.
Thank you.
Is he outside? Yes, thank you. No worries. I'm sorry for that.
No sweat. You're in Israel right now. What time is it there?
Yeah, it's 8 p.m.
And so there's still people at the office at 8 p.m.?
Yes, people are working hard in here. Very dedicated. Wow. To yes, and they don't know I actually have the interview, so they don't play.
So they're just doing their own thing. Wowee. What are the hours you guys keep?
My thesis is not necessarily to have hours as a beginning and end, just to have missions and objectives and let people do their thing. In some cases, they work very hard to make hours like now and even more. In some cases, the opposite. Like they can go out very early if they believe that they achieve their objectives and they are responsible. So we don't have strict hours.
So I've got this partnership with Ahrefs, which helps me see what pages are big on your site, who's linking to you. And when I went to the backlinks page, I could see that every one of your widgets seems to link back to your site And I'm guessing to the privacy policy, because I see a lot of sites like BMJ.com linked to your privacy policy, EasyBib.com linked to your privacy policy. So you're getting links back from all these places. And it's giving me a sense of how many different sites are using your widgets. I'm wondering if there's one that you're especially proud of that you look at and you go, I'm so proud that I get to be even connected to this company.
Yeah, I have a couple, actually, not just one. Mm-hmm. I think Rolling Stones is one to mention. You know, as a fan of music, super high-end pop culture, something that I'm very proud of. The entire PMC group must be, for me, is something that I'm feeling proud of. Beside that, I love the Bundesliga, which is one of the largest kind of football association in Europe. Working with us, and it's a big win for me as somebody, you know, at my early age, I dreamed of being a football player, a soccer player for the American
audience.
Yeah, exactly. BBC is another one.
BBC is using you?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You came up with this idea soon after you started work at Wix. What did you learn from working for Wix, the fast-growing publishing company based in Israel?
So yeah, Wix is a website builder platform that is, beside the fact that they are pioneering their space in Israel, especially, you know, the founding team are you know, very involved in the industry. They are smart people, open, very down to earth, and it's kind of contradicting to the fact that they are, you know, managing a $7 billion company at that point and growing rapidly year over year. So I learned two major things, I think. First of all, the management style and the attitude of how to approach to building a business, especially in, you know, a startup and software. And I think secondly is attention to details and how they build their product bottom up by iterating with the market and putting a lot of emphasis on data they are collecting in order to get get some ideas.
I'm wondering about that. Like, I love to focus on examples as a way of understanding, and I'm wondering if you have an example of how they focused on the details, how they knew that a new product idea, a new feature idea was going to work by doing that iterative style of theirs.
So first of all, everything is impact planning, which is basically that before they do anything, it doesn't matter if it's a feature, a product, a marketing, anything they do, starting by what is the impact we achieve.
Everything. What does that mean?
Impact is like, okay, if I'm going to, let's say I'm building a specific feature in my product, who is going to impact what I believe going to be the uplift in the results that I'm looking for in terms of the KPI, the specific KPI.
Can you give me an example of a feature that we can walk through this understanding for?
Yeah. For an instant, an upgrade form. Okay. An upgrade, let's say, mechanic inside their product that they are trying to obviously get their free users and upgrade them to their paid.
Got it. Okay. So who is it impacting? It's impacting the free users. What's our goal? To increase conversions by a certain number.
Yeah. But this is very high level, what you just said. They are getting into much more detail.
What do you mean?
Specific places, specific audience that come and integrating, and then they do different type of lookalikes and cohort analysis for every specific channel and every devices that they do look differently. So people that come from mobile devices or desktop are totally two different buckets that they are analyzing. And also creating a different type of impact planning. When I say impact planning, in some cases they are already do the research and say, okay, we believe that by changing the product position or the, let's say, the call for action position from the middle of the page to the right corner, for an instance, we will see a 20% uplift on the clicks, but we will see a less conversion for the end, and they are putting a specific, let's say, an assumption behind it. And then it's already kind of framing the mindset to think very carefully about not just what you do, but what you believe is going to be the outcome of everything you do.
Got it. I was thinking much like a bigger product needs that. You're saying even smaller changes have to have that impact planning mentality in them.
Yes. Okay. Not just product, by the way. It's very easy to get relate to it when you're thinking about product and technology, but I think it's also their mentality about everything they do in the business. for marketing budgets to, you know, they have the motto of everything is measurable. Even if it's, it doesn't have numbers behind it, it's still measurable.
So like how is, you know what? I wonder about that. How can you decide if, let's say this interview, how can I decide if it's a good interview or not? What's the, how do you add a measure to it, a measurement to it?
To this interview, it's quite easy, actually, if you think about it. First of all, is how many people we got to, you know, started, click on it, start to listen. Secondly, is how many dropped in the middle. What is the average time they spend on this interview? How many of them really shared it with their friends? So there, you can actually quantify specific metrics behind it, going to give you the picture of the engagements of the performance of this specific interview.
Okay, and so you were at Wix. You are starting to learn this. You're a product manager, and then you go to the founders and you say, "I'm going to start something myself." Did you know what it was going to be?
No, I didn't know.
You just said, "I'm going to go figure something out, and I'm quitting to go do that."
Yeah, and if I want to be a little bit more accurate, I was kind of not a full time job with them. I gave them a service. I used to work as a freelancer after leaving my previous job, which we probably gonna cover in a minute. And then, as part of my service that I gave them around specific projects around product and some of the stuff they did architecturally for their entire market and their giant app market, which is basically, you know, a way to sell widgets on top of their platform. I said, guys, I think I need to stop doing that, even though they tried to do the opposite of bringing me in or luring me in with everything you can imagine. They're smart people. They know their business. They know exactly how to get you excited and incentivized. And I said, okay, guys, this is my time to jump again on this crazy roller coaster, because you know, it wasn't my first time. It was just the pause in between the last time and this one. And I just did it.
What was your first time? Because you mentioned that you had a job before Wix. It was working for a big investment bank. What was the previous startup that you had?
So my first business was actually at the age of 16. I started my first business. I never put myself in a framework of I'm an entrepreneur. I just did what I felt that I wanted to. And I did it. And actually, I knew more what I don't want to do than what I want to. I always looked at, okay, this one I'm not going to do. I'm not going to stand in one place all my life, 9 to 5, do whatever.
And you knew that because even as a teenager, you worked in retail. What kind of retail job did you have?
So it was kind of a very, it's a local brand it's a big local brand in Israel that's selling apparel. And I felt like, okay, just staying in one place, and it doesn't matter if it's a small shop or even working in a big retail chain, and do the same thing over and over from the morning to the end of it, and to be strong and big and make money out of it, even though I didn't make money at the beginning. It felt to me like something I no way I'm going to do. Like I'm going to iterate, try, hit my head on the wall, bleed before I'm going to continue to do that.
You know, my dad sent me to go work in retail when I was a teenager. And I remember being there in the basement, untangling hangers so that new clothes could be put on them and they could be taken up to the floor, putting alarm stickers on shoes so if someone snuck them out of the store, the alarm would go off. And I'd see people in there who were 30s, 40s, and so on. And I'd say, I have to study really hard and work really hard so this does not become my life, because it really absolutely could. And it's not just the people who are working there for minimum wage, even the owner. The owner thought that they were entrepreneurs, but in reality, they were doing the same thing over and over again. And their kids were doing the same thing with a little bit of a pop. And so you recognize that and you said, I got to do something different. But you went a step further. You also said, I see the problem they have. I think I could solve it with technology. And what's the problem that they had in the solution that you came up with?
So they didn't have any distribution mechanic that helps them to bring clients outside of their local place. So basically, it was very strict to their geography, even though they have good product. And in terms of give them an access to sell their products, and it was the early days of online, e-commerce. And I felt that by just connecting, local retailers with potential buyers, make it super simple and stupid, by the way, will bring a new clients and new audience to these guys.
So you're going to help them put their stores online in a marketplace, not their own site necessarily, but a marketplace where anyone who wanted to go shopping can go and buy.
Yes.
Indeed. And you built it at 16?
Yeah.
What was it called?
Zoom.
Zoom. Okay.
Zoom with D.
Zoomed.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? How'd you come up with that name?
So it was actually, I looked for the name a lot of time. The first one was Nona. Nona is grandma in Spanish.
Okay.
And then I looked for a place which kind of connecting between a zoo and what I had in mind back in the days is to make sure that the entire shopping experience will feel like a zoo. Anyway, I was a kid, nothing smart behind it. I didn't find zoo.com, so I found zoomd.com, and this is what, you know, that was the name.
Got it.
I didn't give it too much of attention to the details. And actually, it was pretty good for me as an experience because I think I was very kind of raw in many ways and did things without thinking too much or too carefully about them. And I had a lot of luck to make them successful. And I actually paid for it afterwards because on my second business, when I started at the age of 21, after I finished, Israel, you must go to the army after 3 years of graduating the army. I went to start my second business and it was a total failure.
Wait, let me spend a little bit of time on Zoomed.
Oh, no, of course.
You actually had time and you had the courage to go to local retailers and say, I want to get you on my new website, and you sold them?
No, I did it the opposite. I already put them on my website.
Without even asking them. They didn't need to create it. You just put them on the site. Okay.
I put them on the site, but at the beginning I did it manually. After that, I created the crawler, which basically did it automatically by just pulling the information out of yellow pages back in the days and create kind of your own place in my marketplace.
Okay.
Your own zoo in my marketplace, which is, it's pretty cool, I think, idea back in the days, definitely. Because when I came to the retailers, some of them were small retailers, not necessarily chains. And I showed them, guys, you are on the internet. And there was, you have a website. I can sell your products on the internet. And for them, it was mind-blowing. Think about people that don't have any connection to anything technology. Definitely not thinking about their own website, selling their products via e-commerce, which...
And the again, whole thing could be intimidating. And so what you did was you put it up already for them on the site and you said, do you want to keep this going? All you need to do is...
Click here.
Click here and pay?
And that's it.
They pay monthly fee? Not even monthly fee. Did they have to update their products or anything?
Nothing.
They need to take the orders in?
And just need to take the orders in and make sure they deliver.
Deliver them. You know what? That's something that I think is going to come out in the story about Apster, that you did do that, from what I understand, with a couple of publishers who came to you with interest and you went and you created the widgets for them and you said, here's what it looks like. You're nodding. Sure. It is. Okay. And so you said this was successful. How successful was the business?
Again, as a kid, obviously, relative to where I was, what I made before that and how much my parents made, and it was very successful. My bootstrap.
Relative to how much your parents made?
And much more. I did much more.
Really? How much money are we talking about?
We're talking about around 80K a year as a kid.
In revenue?
In revenue. No. In revenue. In profit. Because
in profit?
Because there's
good Lord. $80,000 just by charging them for what? For monthly fees? Nothing like that? A share of sales?
Yeah. Share of sales that I generated.
Wow. All right. Then why did it close down?
No, I sold it afterwards.
You did?
Yeah, to a small agency. It was pretty nice.
Wow, how much?
For a couple of hundreds.
Get out. What'd you do with it?
Yeah. I went and spent it like crazy kid.
On what?
On a car, the first thing, and then on some cool guitars because I love music. And just being good to my family as well. And I think that was another part for it.
You know what? It's not even on your LinkedIn profile. I said, maybe we didn't copy it right. No, it's not.
It's not. It's not.
Why don't you talk about it more?
I think I just didn't put it as a professional experience for some reason. I just felt for me, it was part of my youth. You know, it was nice experience. I made money. I didn't put my first failure as well on my LinkedIn. I actually need to put both of them now. I'm very proud of this experience, must say.
Yeah.
It teach me a lot.
And impressive.
It got me the one thing that is probably more important than anything else. It got me the kind of the self-belief in myself that I can do whatever I want. Whatever I believe I can do, and I can make it happen. And it doesn't matter if you will or not. It doesn't matter if you will succeed or not. But if you don't have this attitude to begin with, your probability of succeeding will be very low. And I think this is something that I got out of it, and this is something I'm still holding.
I'm glad we paused on that. And then you were starting to say that there was another business. What was the other one?
So the other one was actually not an online at all. It was an offline business that one of my friends pulled me to open a sport bar. Again, I had some money, which I saved. And I said, okay, why not? A sport bar sounds like a cool thing to do in Israel. No one had a sport bar in Israel. We went to London and Amsterdam, and we saw a couple of them as a cool kind of thing to have, like a sport bar, which is a bar with a sport events, and you can bet on sporting events, everything in one place. Again, 21 years old. It sounds like a dream come true. And I said, why not opening that as well in Israel? And then I did every mistake you can imagine, basically. Literally every mistake that you can dream of, from the wrong places, arrogant attitude without really doing research, packaging the product not the right way, not executing the plan, not detailed to the revenue, not detailed to the profit. Like everything off, and it was a big bust, a very fast one as well.
Do you remember when you realized you failed after succeeding and having this new identity of a successful entrepreneur or successful thinker? Do you remember the lowest moment with that bar?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the lowest bar was when some of my friends came and we started laughing about it out loud together, all of us. Like, okay, this is a fucking shit show.
It's like, how do we get in this mess? You're laughing at it, but you're realizing it's
We're laughing at it, and we understand how, I'm sorry for my language, fucked up of a situation it is.
Yep.
And it was a moment which I understand, okay, I cannot disguise it anymore. And not just that, I need to take responsibility of asking the questions of what the hell went wrong. Because my previous success was not planned at all. Nothing was planned behind it. And because it was a big success, and almost an easy money, if you think about it, for me, as a young entrepreneur, instead of creating the immune system you need to create for yourself, because it's super important, it created the opposite. It off my guard. You know, I started to think about that I have some magic charm, that I just need to bring the product, the right idea, package it nicely, and it will be successful. It's obviously not working like that. And, that was my experience.
You know what, Moti, we could have brushed over this completely. I didn't ask you about it. It's not on your LinkedIn. It's not in my notes. You volunteered it because I'm sensing it's an important part of your life. Why? What is it that you got out of it that's worthy of highlighting?
I think first of all, don't be ashamed of your failures. I think it's something you should definitely be put out there. And not as just to sound like, I had some failures and now I'm successful entrepreneurs. No, because it's a key milestone that most likely you need to experience before you're succeeding. I think 99% of every successful entrepreneur out there will tell you about a huge failure that he had before that. And again, there's nothing more, eye-opening when you're taking responsibility on the failure. Really, don't try to disguise it. Don't try to put it on someone else. Just ask the questions and be brutally honest with yourself about what went wrong. And then if you're good, you will learn out of it something. And hopefully not going to repeat the same one.
I wonder if it also got you to the place where you knew you were capable of succeeding because Zoom did well, but you also knew you were capable of failing because the sports bar didn't. And so it pushed you to be one, but also be cautious of falling in the trap of being the failure.
Absolutely.
Let me take a moment and talk about my second sponsor. My first sponsor, it's HostGator. I'm going to ask you something. So HostGator allows anyone to create a website using one click to install WordPress and build up their business. Do you, as someone who's seen a lot of publishing companies, do you have an idea of what works? If someone's listening to us and says, you know what, I'd like to create something just as an experiment. I'd like to create something just like Moti created this business when he was 16, helped him learn something. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. But either way, I'll do more than just listen. I'll be able to act. What's an idea? What are you seeing that's working in content?
Okay, content, I think be genuine is important, to be kind of simple, not too sophisticated.
But is there a topic or approach that you're seeing works?
I don't believe that there's one topic that works. I think you have a lot of different audiences for different type of topics with their own passion. I think what's important is the passion that you put in the content you produce. If you really believe in what you do, you really like what you're doing when you're producing content, and you're thinking about not necessarily the clicks or not necessarily the, you know, the clickbaits that are going to generate the right CPMs, but actually thinking about what is my target audience is, what they care about, and passionately speak about it, and then package it the right way. I think not just to talk about the right things, but also package them the right way that it fits to today's kind of consumer's demand.
You know what I've seen? Tell me what you think of this. Mm-hmm. So a guy that I've known for a few years, Chase Reeves, mm-hmm. he has a website where he gives reviews about backpacks and other kinds of bags.
Exactly.
Right, like a whole site just on that. And you love it? I wouldn't have thought there was anything to it. I would have thought, what a waste of time. If anyone wants a review, they just go to Amazon or somewhere else. So what he does, though, is he gives his own spin on it. He has a site full of this stuff. He's now added other things like bars that he really likes to eat when he's out working coffee shops. And then he does these hour-long review sessions on YouTube where he reviews freaking backpacks. And because I'm kind of compelled by him and his style and his attitude, and because I sometimes look for backpacks as a guy who's working outside of the office a lot, I'll spend an hour looking at a sling, a daily sling, these little things that you can throw over your shoulder with nothing but your iPad if you want, right? Or a couple of things. Or a backpack for traveling internationally for a guy who does not want to have a wheelie bag with him, just wants a backpack. So he does these long sessions. Eventually you say, I'm kind of interested. I got the big gist from it, but I'm going to go over to his website to read more detail and to see it in a more organized way. You go there, you click to buy, he gets a commission, and I feel fine. I feel great about him getting a commission because what I'm getting is his take on it. And I've noticed that after Wirecutter hit big, just before they even sold to the New York Times, all they did was review products with links to sites to buy it. And then they usually Amazon, and then they got a commission from any time anyone bought it. I'm feeling like there's an opportunity now to create these types of really customized sites where the reviewer reviews just one thing. It could be 360 cameras, you know, those cameras that shoot in three, whatever, and so on. Where they might benefit from Appster, which we're going to talk about in a bit, is imagine if it was more than just an article. Imagine if it was pictures of the product, video of the product, some survey so you get to see what people think. Will 360 work for underwater or whatever it is, right? To make it more interesting. And of course, the money is in the referral links. All right, you're nodding. I'm going to tell people whether it's that idea or any other idea that you've got, take it to HostGator. When you go to HostGator.com/Mixergy, you get one-click install of WordPress. You can get up and running fast. If you look at Chase's website, you'll see it's basic text. He doesn't overcomplicate it, and he adds a couple of little frills. Your frill could be Apster. Your frill could be anything that brings your site to life in the way that feels right to you. Go to hostgator.com/mixergy with that idea or anything else. You will get the lowest price that they have available. Frankly, their price is already super low. So yeah, you'll save a few pennies beyond anywhere else if you use my link, but you'll also be supporting Mixergy and you'll be up and running. If you're not happy with them, they'll give you your money back. hostgator.com/mixergy. So you quit with Wix. You say, listen, guys, I like your company, but I've got to go create my own company. It's time for you to come up with your own idea. How did you come up with the idea?
So I started by asking what I love to do again. Like this time I want to do a little bit more of a research before I'm just jumping. And I did the research. I did my internal research and just some external research as well, obviously what's happening in the market. I was a little bit more mature in understanding how to, you know, to look at opportunity, to put it in the right bucket and understand if it's worth a while or not. So I started by saying, okay, I love games. I love game theories. I love visual science. What the hell is combining all those things together? And when I started to work on what became Apster eventually, I said the world of games, and it was like the beginning of gamification kind of. You remember 2011, 2012, it was kind of a big thing. Everybody spoke about it. Yes, gamified everything. It will make life better, and et cetera. They did some good gamified, actually, to many physical things that actually worked and create different type of behavior. And it clicked to me, okay, this is a behavioral analysis with game theory, game dynamics, stuff that we added. And I said, okay, maybe I can create something around that one. And I said, okay, first of all, I'm going to look at very carefully about what is needed to be done in this market if I believe in this one, and who is the target audience for that. And eventually I came up with brands will need a way to communicate with their consumers in a much more effective way. And we need to give them the tools to make it very easy and utilize some of those of the smart game dynamics as part of their assets.
Got it. So instead of commercials that play on TV, instead of banner ads, which frankly they didn't work, he said, what if we create a game for them? People will immerse themselves in the brand. They'll play it and happen to know more about the company. Got it. Is this Qmerce?
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. Look at this. I got like an old screenshot of Qmerce from an article that I read about it. It's
my God. that's an old fashioned. Yes, that's.
Yeah. And so TechCrunch wrote about it. Mm-hmm. You got Pizza Hut in Israel, the local franchise, to say yes to you. What did you create for Pizza Hut?
So we created basically, again, I came from Wix. So everything for me was how I can make it super easy to produce those type of things and make it not just because to go and create a game for every brand that I'm working with is not scalable. The business model behind it would be very hard. And again, also the price for it will be super high, which will create a super high barrier of entry. So we went to the kind of very easy to use platform drag and drop approach to producing those type of immersive games. And then like you can, now you would hear a pattern in the way I do business in many times. I just said, okay, let's create a couple of good games for a couple of good brands. One of them was Pizza Hut, and created in advance.
Wait a minute. One sec. You didn't even sell to them. You just said, I like Pizza Hut. I think they're local. I want to create a game for them, just like you did back when you were 16. And you create, oh, got it. I was wondering how you got them.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the game you created for Pizza Hut?
And then one of my friends, like, again, I was already kind of have some connections in the local industry. So I wasn't like clueless of having a network that can help me to open, open doors. But I created with Qmerce, and then just send it to my friend that I knew that he knows the CEO of the chain in Israel, and after almost and less than 40 minutes of me sending the email, I received a call from the CEO itself saying, "Dude, I love that. Please come to my office tomorrow." And then it happened, and I did it a couple of times, and it actually worked quite nicely.
And what did the game do?
It was simple casual games. It was kind of from Bubbles to Bejeweled, if you remember, and all those guys. Specifically for Pizza Hut, it was a racing car which is delivering a pizza and trying to avoid obstacles all the way. That was
and the idea was people would play this on Facebook at a time when Facebook was
and kind of an app platform, not just a social network.
Right. And I remember actually, I think it was TechCrunch's writer who said, I don't think anyone's going to play this. I looked at the stats. It's 80 minutes of play for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy goes, here, let me see. I found it. It's Roy Carthy. Roy says, all right, I'm going to eat my hat. I can't believe it, but it actually is sticking. And so how long did it take you to build this? And then, oh no, it was average user play was 50 minutes. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to create this launch to create this type of product?
Around 7 months, something like that.
Seven months to create this Wix-like experience where anyone can quickly create a game, and you got a couple of customers. I'm trying to see some of the others. I don't see them here, so I'll just continue. Oh, there it is. Crocs signed up, right? The shoe company. Okay, fantastic.
Crocs. And I think it was the first U.S. one, U.S.-based one, who actually used it as well.
And was that, again, you creating a game for them, sending it over and saying, do you want this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fantastic. When did you say this is not going to work out? I've got to close it down.
when we try to scale it, we see that we had a lot of issues convincing marketing departments to utilize games in order to create engagement with their audience and make it a more effective way to deliver the message. And we understood better that the cap of this company will be, if I will be super successful, around the $20 million, which is obviously a beautiful outcome, don't get me wrong. But when I started the business again, I had this already kind of working with Wix, huge company, hundreds of millions already back in those days. And I had the appetite to build something much bigger.
So you're saying this could have been big, but you said it's not going to be big enough?
Mm-hmm.
And this was a bootstrap company at that point?
Yeah, at the beginning it was bootstrap.
Why? What is it about you that makes you want to go even bigger? Why wouldn't a $20 million business be okay for you, have a nice lifestyle, travel to Europe?
So first of all, yes, it's a painful, I must say, if somebody hear me now as a young entrepreneur and have some successful something in his hands, and can know to scale it out to 20 million and can make it happen. First of all, make it happen and then sell it and start the next one. This is my by the way, if I need to give my two cents when I'm looking at the retro.
Because
you, first of all, never know what you never know. You don't know if you can start with something that starts with a specific, let's say, segment or a specific offering. And when you're growing it to become a successful, profitable business, to take it to a next step, it's sometimes much easier than to start something from scratch, even if you don't see the kind of the big outcome on the first step you do. And I think also in many ways, when you holding something that you can sell it and somebody willing to pay for it, don't drop it that fast. This is another maybe lesson that I learned. And when I did it again, I was a bit arrogant on that matter. And I said, no, it's not good enough. Not big enough, not strong enough. I want to go bootstrap. I want to make some nice numbers of growth. I'm coming to investors. I want to raise money and build a big business first time as a startup, kind of a real startup that actually went to VCs, you know, talking about vision, market and stuff like that. And then I got the reaction that everything I do is not that interesting. And I got caught in this moment and say, okay, it's probably not that interesting as everybody's saying. And it could be maybe a good business, but not a big one. And I don't want to do something that's just a good business. I want to do a big, substantial business. And I choose to drop it while it was nice revenue in very short amount.
You closed it up.
I didn't really close it. I just pivoted from it.
And let it stay on its site, bring in its revenue, but you didn't put energy.
And then after, I killed it, obviously, because it's a matter of focus and maintenance. And I think in every startup life, and when you were a small startup or a small business, it doesn't matter. You should be laser focused. So after a while, when I saw that we found what became Apster eventually, we find the light for a big business. We said, okay, it's time to kill Qmers and let's refocusing everything, all our energy on Apster. And this is exactly what we've done.
I just assumed that Facebook made a change that killed Qmers. It's not what happened. It's you that decided this is who I am. All right, let me just sum up a couple of things that I learned about your experience with Qmers. Number one, when there are these new platforms, in this case for you it was Facebook, but frankly, similar things happen when phones came out. I bet when virtual reality becomes a thing, a similar opportunity comes up. When when these new platforms come out, brands want to know how to be a part of it. If you can create an experience for a brand, they have the money to pay you for it instead of trying to get a bunch of users to a bunch of consumers to try it to find it. Number one. Number two, create a platform kind of like Wix did, like you did, where it's easy to crank out new products for your customers. Number three, send it to the customer. So you imagine if virtual reality becomes a thing, you create a platform that you could create games for. I could even imagine like a racing game in virtual reality for Pizza Hut. You've got to deliver the pizza fast, right? Let people play it. They might engage in it for 50 minutes because the whole platform's so new. They're just looking for anything to engage with. If you create it in a way that you can do it and spin it up fast, send it to Pizza Hut and say, hey, you got this thing. It's already ready. Do you want to buy it so you can use it? And then get other customers. And then next thing is, at some point, if you do this fast enough, someone's going to want to buy it. Don't be so arrogant that you push off that sale. Sell it and allow yourself to go and have the next big one. And I'm going to add one other thing. I find that coming from a place of no fear gives you tremendous power. That if you have that first big sale of a business behind you, you don't stay up at night going, I'm going to be completely destroyed. And that's wasted mental energy. You know, I did it once. You know, you've got enough in the bank that you're no longer worried about what happens if you can't eat and have to sleep on the street. And now you can think about what's my next big thing? What world am I conquering? And go for broke on that one. At least go for that business breaking, but don't allow yourself to be financially ruined. Am I summing it up right?
No, I think you got it.
I'm so glad we spent time on Qmers. Now that I understand the detail behind it, and I did my research on it, I had no idea this is what happened. Okay, so then you started to adjust and say there's a new thing coming. Part of it was you being inspired by being on Snapchat. You were playing around with Snapchat?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, what did you experience? Take me through the new... Oh, you know what? I'm sorry to take... Let me take a moment. Mochy, I've got to tell you about a company called TopTal. It's the second sponsor. And then we're going to get into what happened that led you to create Apster. Why Apster? Why Apster?
Yeah, because it's a combination of ape and hipster, I believe.
And hipster?
Yes. And an hipster ape, basically.
Why did you want a hipster ape? Is this just you looking for a name that's unique?
No, I think what I actually want to create a brand which is a kind of an alter ego that's laughing about humanity. I think we are taking ourselves a little bit too serious as a creature. We're just hipster apes who knows how to play with technology and dress nice. That's why.
We're not that special. Yes, we can dress a little nicer than apes, but we're not that much more significant. And just like apes, we're at some point going to die. Let's just enjoy where we are today.
Yes.
All right. Second sponsor is a company called TopTal. Eventually, for every company, they're going to be thinking, how do I hire a developer? If you're listening to me, that's going to be an issue for you. Frankly, even with my WordPress site, I said, I need to hire a developer. I started going through the usual channels like everyone else. And if you're doing it, you're going to be placing some ads. Maybe you go check out the freelance websites and so on. What I found was a lot of people who see, first of all, it's a long, drawn out process, takes forever to find someone, but also a lot of people who seem good when you're talking to them, when you're giving them theoretical problems, when you're even giving them small problems, they give you an impression of how great they are. But then when you hire them and give them the project that's the real thing, they're not that great. What you want is somebody who will stand behind them. And the truth is, Mochy, you know this, people don't have much to lose by saying, yeah, I can do this. They could even throw themselves into the first project, maybe even get outside help. They don't have much to lose. If they get the job, great. Worst case, you let them go. But mostly, you hire them and maybe there's some momentum that will let them keep sticking with you. That's the mentality that they have. If you go to TopTal, what you get is a company that stands behind the developers. So I had a listener of mine who said, I'm done with all these different resumes coming in. I need to hire quickly. Andrew keeps talking about TopTal. Great. He went to toptal.com/Mixergy. He talked to a matcher. The matcher understood what he was looking for, put two people in front of him. This guy talked to the two people, said, all right, they're both great. And TopTal is standing behind them. So it's not like they're just spewing out yes answers and great results for the practice, for the experiments that we're putting in front of them. They've done great work and TopTal stands behind them. And so he hired one of them. Person ended up being phenomenal. And he continued with TopTal and basically hired his whole team from there. If you're out there listening to me, you owe it to yourself. And frankly, Mochy, you're listening to me, you owe it to yourself to go check in with TopTal.
I'm going to check for sure.
We're talking about best of the best. We're not looking for the cheapest, not super expensive, but we want the best of the best. And that's what TopTal is about. If you go to toptal.com/Mixergy, hit that big button, you'll be able to schedule a conversation with a matcher. Heaton Shaw, one of my guests, the founder of so many companies, including Crazy Egg and Kissmetrics and so on, and FYI most recently, he said the matcher is the best part of TopTal because it helped him think through who he was hiring. And then if you hire from them, great. They'll even give you 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period. If you don't want to hire from them, all you've given up is a little bit of time with an intelligent person who's going to help you think through your project. So go to toptal.com/Mixergy to get those 80 hours and find out more details. That's top is in top of your head, tal is in talent, toptal.com/Mixergy, toptal.com/Mixergy. I have to keep spelling it out because I talk too super fast. Mochy, you have a good cadence. You're not a super fast talker.
Yeah, no, I think I kind of learned that in my experience in New York. I think you must.
In New York, you learn to talk fast?
Yeah, I think in New York, and it's actually backed by research as well. You know that, I don't remember the research name, but it was a good one which I actually read I'm a freak of science, by the way. So the research was a huge correlation between how fast people speak into the amount of population in the city they live.
Oh, so the more people there that are there, the faster people speak?
Yes.
I didn't realize that. That makes sense though, right? I did grow up in New York. I kind of assumed in Israel that people were speaking really fast.
I think in Israel there is a mentality of speaking fast, but science saying that if you live in a high population city, most likely you speak faster, you move faster as well.
So talk to me about how Apester came up as a result of you trying out new social media experiences.
So when I started to, like you said, as a consumer, basically, as a user of Snapchat, I remember when they launched the Discover section with the story format for content, and not just for UGC. And it was for me, I'm a product guy, and I would like to believe I'm a vision guy, that kind of understanding, again, game theory, love strategy. So everything for me, always trying to think what is the next couple of steps, not just the next. And the minute I saw Snapchat kind of Discover, I knew, or I felt, okay, this is the medium. This is going to be the format for mobile. It's the first time somebody really cracked mobile experience, not just took things that born in desktop and brought them to mobile, but really thought carefully about what it means mobile. From the behavior of the consumer, what he's expecting to get out of it. You know, the visual, the full screen, the tap, that you can control the pace of how you consuming the content, the fact that it's vertical, it's much easier to hold your phone as a vertical instead of, you know, horizontal. And for me, it's clicked. I felt like, okay, this is going to be a huge thing. And not just that, I think the next wave will be not just content and UGC, it will be services and utilities on top of it. And it's funny because we're starting to see it now happen. You know, the shoppable stories experience and everything else now becoming stories is not just a way to package experience when you're traveling as a consumer or your article in a new visual way. But I think it's again, it's kind of touching the core elements of behavior in mobile. It's full screen, it's in your hand in a vertical experience. You control the pace, very easy in and out. And if you package experiences in the same way, it will deliver better results. Because good experience, and it doesn't matter for what, more likely will deliver.
Yeah, you know what? For me, it was...
Okay.
Sorry, the connection just broke up for a second. So I get you. For me, I was thinking when I first saw it is cute. I'm engaged. It's a problem for me. I better watch out. I like the way you were thinking, which is why am I so sucked into this? What is it about this that's unique? And you're right. It's tap to control it. Full screen experience. There's something about moving your phone to the side. It's not a big deal, but it does feel like a big deal. It feels like, all right, now I'm actively paying attention because I've shifted my phone into landscape from portrait mode. All right. And you said more is going to happen that way. Commerce will shift into those stories. More interaction will be in there. Maybe games will be in that format. And so did you say to yourself, I want to go after publishers and bring it to them? Or did you say, let me go talk to publishers and see if this is even a solution to a problem that they have?
So I think what I said is not necessarily just publishers or not. Again, I took the same kind of almost the same trick that I'm using always is, okay, how can I build something that make it very easy and accessible for everyone? Like make it super simple to produce those experiences and take it out of social gardens, the social closed garden, then bring it for different needs. And for me, the publishing and media industry was kind of a natural first step towards this, because they are probably going to be the early adopters. They have the biggest pain for it because they are losing their money, attention, consumers to the social networks who pioneered with those experiences. And I started to build the prototype, you know, the first prototype by myself again. And the second, I would say, meeting that I had with a publisher, when I started to approach publishers and say, guys, we want to show you our new platform that can help you engage your audience, tell a story in a much better way. Obviously, no one knew about Snapchat back in the days, especially not publishers. So I didn't mention Snapchat. I just said, guys, we have the tools for you to create more engaging experience. They're going to drive better results to the stories you generate, more shares, more time on your site, eventually more money. And we went to one, sport blog in UK, which actually have offices in Israel as well. And then we said, okay, a brand that is not an Israeli brand, because again, to work in the Israeli industry as a startup, not necessarily going to give you an option to scale or not necessarily represent how the world works as well. So and I think this is part of the mentality of Israeli startups that are born to global approach. They are must think global.
They were your first customer?
So they were my first customer.
Is it Calculist?
So Calculist is, okay, yes. Calculist is an Israeli one. They still used to be in my, and using Qmers as a kind of.
So you went back to them and you said, hey, you're using Qmers. Do you want to try this thing? They said yes. And they were the very first ones.
They were the very first one in Israel. But then when, the second meeting was with 101 Great Goals, which is a UK blog for sport. We pitched it. They liked it. They very easily, very fast integrated, the widget as part of their blog and content. And what happened, again, me learning from the Wix playbook, and you said how many of our widgets are backlinked to the website based on the technology you use to scan it, is that we created a watermark on every widget that being producing with Apster. A small watermark that basically created a backlink to our website. So when you see this as a consumer and it got you intrigued and you ask yourself, what the hell am I seeing now? And I want to have the same thing or at least explore it. You click on this backlink and you're getting to my website and there was a free traffic. And not just free marketing for me, which created an inbound mechanic that was driving more and more, but is already doing the best sell you can imagine. And it's somebody experienced it, liked it, and coming to ask, how can I do it? And it was for us, instead of doing a website with all the information and explanation, we done the opposite. Blank sheet with put your email and we will contact you. That's it. If you want to hear more, put your email and we will contact you. The one field funnel, uh-huh. Which worked brilliantly. We actually got... Telegraph suddenly, huge publisher in the UK, contact us through the contact list. And then also Huffington Post, the local UK Huffington Post contact us. And we were kind of, we were five people in the team. And what we are, I think we're freak about fast response as well. Like all of us have an ADD and looking at the every inbound that came. And then when we started to see kind of almost exponential factor. More widgets created, more people see it, more inbound. We're getting without doing anything, without doing right. Goals, without doing marketing, without doing sales. So we created kind of an inside sales, not necessarily sales. It was more like trying to capture the leads and transform them to clients or partners because we gave it for free at the beginning and it clicked. The second biggest publisher we brought was Telegraph, which is a huge,
huge
media company.
Not just in, as far as like recognition, but they churn through traffic, massive traffic.
They have massive traffic. And so, especially in UK, they are a very kind of lucrative, well-known brand that created for us, not just, again, another inbound effect that provided a lot of inbound.
Yeah, but in the US, the Wall Street Journal is a very well-known, respected brand, but the traffic difference is tremendous, right? Mm-hmm. And so the experience that I see today, I went to TV Insider and mm-hmm. I read an article about some TV show. And then as I scrolled, I saw this thing that looked so familiar, so much like an Instagram or Snapchat story, complete with the dashed lines at the top that tell you that there's more to the story, complete with if I tap, I continue. And tell me if I'm wrong, but I think as soon as I tapped one of these videos that were on mute with text at the top, it felt very much like a Snapchat story. Mm-hmm. As soon as I tapped it, it went into full screen on my phone. Yes. Right. And then I could tap the rest and go into it. And then once I was done with that, I think there were other stories. No, once I was done with that, it said, share and be an influence, share an influence. And I thought, that's interesting, actually, that people today aspire to be influencers. And the way you're an influencer is you share something that other people then start getting absorbed with. Anyway, so that whole experience, that's essentially what you created, but not as, without as many features as I might have experienced today.
No, you're right. I think this is was definitely what we created, very much, 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 I say, less superior to what you see today and less polished, but still the same logic, same idea, same kind of value behind it. And it was also we created afterwards a feed, which is created the rabbit hole kind of experience you mentioned before as a consumer when you went to Instagram, because I think part of you not taking the content too serious is the fact that it's pull you to one experience after another, if it's personal, if it makes sense for you, you will continue consuming. So we created those kind of, different type of behaviors and mechanics in the product, and it clicked, it worked. Like the engagement rate was crazy. The click-through rates, the completion rates, the people that went from one story to another was a huge numbers. And I think compared to any widget out there, we were at least 10x or 20x better in the results.
And so the first version didn't do all the things that I saw. Didn't have the polling. Didn't have the I forget what the other features were. It's all up on your site. It's apestr.com. What did it have?
So it was actually ad polling. It was very simple, kind of a visual slide that you can create with us, either adding a video or an image and add a poll to it with and creating kind of a story experience with a poll on it, which was related to the article we're reading most of the time. And it was it kind of pulled people to engage with it because they want to be part of the content, inside of leaving a comment, I think, in the beginning. Also, what part of the thesis was that so many people consume the content, many of them want to engage and tell what they feel, but very small portion of them actually leave a comment. If you can give them a much easier way to tell or to be part, to take part, but not necessarily too much to commit for it, they will do it in large numbers. And that's why we created the polling experience and kind of the thumbs up, thumbs down, kind of interactive components that you can add to those slides. And that was the beginning, like a super simple polling on top of the visual experience.
I'm on apestr.com. I see polling. There's a quiz. There's a personality test. And there's an interactive video. There's, of course, the story feature. I see that you kept adding and adding to it. You told us that at first you were just giving it away for free. What did you charge for eventually? What's the first thing you charge for?
So the first thing, as part of working in the media business, you know that it's very hard to charge media companies, by the way. You know, publishers don't like to pay. Not just that, it was starting to have this atmosphere in the industry that they are struggling as a business, and they even had a more tough time to purchase product, even if it gave them a lot of money. So yep, we went and built a business model actually supporting their needs and delivering revenue for them as part of the experience and do a rev share model, which is basically made our sale much easier with these guys. Like, okay, this is Apestr. We're just going to give you the tools that are going to make your experience much better and more effective, but we can give you money out of it as well. And was very kind of an easy sell. And it created different behaviors. I think like anything you do, almost every decision on a product level or business or business model, sometimes you don't expect what are the negative behaviors you generate as part of it. You always think about the positive. Right? Yeah, it's going to be much easier to sell it now. People will be more likely to look for it and test it. And if it's going to work for them, most likely they're going to increase it. But on the other hand, for an instant for us, what happened is that they start to duck at us too much as a product to generate revenue, which is not our, you know, core element. It wasn't our thing.
You mean you were starting to get compared to Outbrain and other ad...
Yeah.
Got it. And what are we making more from? Are we making more from a quiz or making more from an ad? Well, if we're making more from an ad and we're putting more work into the quiz, then why are we doing that? And I see. Okay. And that became an issue for you.
Yeah. It became an issue because it created a collision or dissonance between what the company was about and the values behind it and the feature set and what we've done every day when we wake up in the morning, or trying to craft an experience that eventually providing engagement and value and storytelling approach and much better experience, and just put us in a bucket of make more money out of it. And it wasn't our DNA, first and foremost. You know, sometimes it's a DNA thing. You know, you need to be, this is, should be your attitude and what you focus on. And secondly, it's also created kind of a partnership model, which I didn't like. I didn't like the partnership approach of somebody don't appreciate the value that I'm bringing beside the money. And it needed and then it took us another step back and asked some questions about what we can do in order to influence what we really want to achieve, which is a real partnership with real content creation, real understanding of the value that can be generated by integrating extra experience, and not necessarily just compare us dollar to dollar.
And so how did you do that?
It's still a work in progress, first and foremost. Like, I think it's part of our challenges always. But we started to speak with other departments beside the guys from the business. You know, we started to get the product involved. We thought about how to get in the editorials involved much better and much faster in the beginning. We combined some of the values we generate for editorials and for, let's say, a product, and package it differently for them, especially in creating kind of an incentive to participate or work with HTR in a smarter way. And it actually was benefit for revenue as well, because we always said, and we still believe in that, and I believe that it's going to be true forever, is that when you're producing good experience and good content and you package it the right way, it's most likely will generate more revenue for you. You just need to think a little bit better, or to give it a little bit more of more attention to how you do it. But it was quite straightforward. You created good content with HTR, you integrated your editorial team, you integrated the product team, which kind of put it in the right places and kind of created HTR as part of the native app or web applications. The revenue was higher. And then we just showed them, yes, I know that you're looking for revenue, the business guys, let's say, on the publishing side. Look at the numbers that we're generating when you actually utilize HTR the right way. And for us, I think this is it's still a challenge, but it's always the one thing that we not just aspire to. We believe that it's a necessity to succeed.
So I told you we have a partnership with Ahrefs, which is it's SEO research tool, but it also gives me insight into what people are doing with their businesses. I put your site into Ahrefs. I went to top pages to see what are the top pages on your site, and interestingly, it's a bunch of what you guys I guess created at one point. discover.apster.com. True. And it's a bunch of people's creations of, I guess, pages with these different widgets on them. And I had a sense that as I looked at that, that what you probably thought was, what if we become a destination site? People really like these experiences where you just tap, tap, tap and move. What if we enable anyone to create it? We give them a page with all their creations, just like they share photos on Instagram, they share text on Twitter. They could, on Apster, share their interactive stories, and people are going to be maybe better at creating them than businesses are, and definitely better than we are. And it seems like you went for it, people created it, and then you just said, it's not working. And you started to deprecate it. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Why didn't it work?
I don't think it didn't necessarily work. But again, it got me to a point which I understand that if I want to do it the right way, I need to focus much more on that as well and put more resources. And one of my good and the bad that I have is that I have a lot of ideas. I always want to create more stuff. But more stuff and more ideas is a lack of focus. Lack of focus is the number one killer of every business and startup. And it's still a dream, what you're saying. It's still a hunch for me. I still believe that it could happen, what you just described. But I just pause it for a minute and say, okay, I must focus on the platform and the B2B2C approach, make it super successful. And then, after I build it, I can think about the B2C approach.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, it does make sense. And what I like about it, just because I happen to be using Ahrefs for it, I could see the SEO power of it too, that there are random things that people might be looking for. Like, this is not what you want to rank for necessarily, but I don't know what Pedogate was, but I guess it was some kind of news story. You guys got to rank for, you got traffic from that. And then I saw people create these experiences for Meghan Markle, is that her name? The princess. Mm-hmm. When she got married, there was a thing. When she was getting pregnant, there was a thing. All right, I get how all that worked out. Let me close it out with this. Our producer asked you, what's one thing that we should be talking about that we haven't? And you said, well, I think we should be explaining to people that the landscape in media has changed. What is the change that you've seen? Where do you see it going?
So I think the change was due to many factors, due obviously to mobile and social, which kind of the combination of them, both of them, was vicious in many ways. It was vicious because in one day almost, the big media companies lost their distribution channels. And when social came and became the gate to the internet, and not just that, but also they lost the way they used to engage with audience. You know, papers, newspapers, when they went to desktop, was kind of almost the same. Quite similar.
I see. And so you're saying when we went to digital from paper, there was a new experience with a publisher, like let's say TechCrunch. You thought, I'm going to TechCrunch's website. I'm going to experience the article there. Some people would use an RSS reader, but for the most part, people are going to the site and reading it. Once you go to Facebook and Twitter and Instagram to experience the news, then TechCrunch loses a lot. They can't add features that they want. They can't follow up the way that they want. They're up. It's up to the algorithm, et cetera. Okay, this is a big change that has happened over the last few years.
So it was a huge change. It changed not just the consumer dynamics, and it's also changed the way that I think the cost structure of the business should look like and the way that you do the business. You cannot hold the same cost structure you used to have as a big publisher or media company.
You mean what? You have to reduce expenses, or you have to change them?
Yes. I think at the beginning, they most of them needed to reduce their expenses first and foremost. Again, just to stop losing money and hitting the wall with the same approach, and then stick to the roots of what they do the best. Think about the content they want to produce, and think about how they package it the right way in order to reach their audience, and fiercely fight for their own distribution channels, their own direct distribution channels. Because when you work in a business and you lost all distribution and then you rely on third-party distribution, you are by nature an hostage of this distribution channel, and they can kill you in one day. And you need to put it in mind and think about them. You know, every business have their own different attitude to it, but I think it should be something you constantly put on your list. I need to build direct distribution to my consumers, to my...
And what does direct distribution mean beyond having a website? What does it mean?
So having a website is not direct distribution. Having a website is just your presence. You need to, a way that you can reach to those consumers. So on one hand is, for an instant, a newsletter, an email list that you're building based on many things you can try to collect and build it one after one. Secondly, is to think about how you're producing kind of mini experiences like native apps, that are producing something that can be related to the audience you're trying to attract. And then get them as incentivized to go to your website, main app, and et cetera. But, and you can think about many kind of podcast, obviously. It's a great way to create your own kind of direct distribution. I would say a way to build audiences that, again, eventually you can influence them to go to whatever destination you are and whatever product you sell them, by the way, not just media. I think it's a necessary for every digital business, which today is basically almost everyone.
All right, that makes sense. I'm noticing, for example, Gary Vaynerchuk, who's huge on social. I sensed for a long time his approach was, don't bother with your own experience. Just give yourself into social. What I'm seeing now is, yes, he does have an email list, but what he's pumping the most is text messages. Text me. Even in his videos on Instagram, at the top is, here's my number, text me. And once you text him, then he starts to tell you about the stuff that he's doing, bring you to his website, sometimes bring you to his social experiences. And he's got his new wine library text thing. No, it's a text wine, wine text?
Text wine. I think text wine.
Text wine, where he'll text you a new wine offer. Got it. All right. And so that's what you're saying. Think directly. And that's, it's frankly much harder than going to Instagram and letting them do it, or even YouTube and letting their algorithm find people. But it gives you a longer term relationship with your customers.
I must say, it's not one against the other. I think you must have the approach of how you're supporting both of them. You're supporting the existing channels that consumers are at, like social and YouTube, and for an instant, Shopify or Amazon if you're an e-commerce store. But you should always find a way to create a direct approach as well. And think about, because also you need to look and quantify the time to ROI and the ROI for those direct, which eventually would lead to much more benefit than using third-party distribution technologies.
All right. For anyone who wants to go check it out, the website is Apestr. If you're even a small publisher, they've got a free plan so you can go and experience it and put it on your site.
Not just a publisher. I'm sorry for stopping you, Andrew. I think it's also for any brand and website owner who want to make their audience more engaged and eventually leads them to better conversions.
You know what I like is I love the video at the top of your screen. What is that? The video that you guys have right now, it's like Donald Trump and Kim Jong Un sitting there. Is that the type of experience that we could create on our site, or is that just a video that you created for yourselves to talk about what you do?
So I think it wasn't even talking about what we do. Like there is an element of trying to show the collage experience. Like you can collage many things to visual.
Oh, I could do that with an Apestr.
Yeah, you can do something. Not at that quality, I must be honest. Like this one we created with Apestr and then did a kind of an after work with After Effects in order to make it super shiny.
But, yes, but I could create a collage experience. So if I don't have somebody nodding or shaking their head, no, I could use a collage to move their heads. Got it. Yeah, your site does have really nice style to it. I like it a lot. All right. It's apestr.com for anyone who wants to go check it out, experience it for yourself. And now that you've, after you see it, you'll start to notice that it's been on a few sites that you've been on and maybe you didn't realize who did it. And now you've got a sense of who it is. Moti Cohen, thank you so much for being in here. And thank you very much for my two sponsors who made this interview happen. If you're hiring developers, it's toptal.com/Mixergy. If you're building a website for your business, for your idea, for your, I don't know, wedding even now, people need a website, go to hostgator.com/Mixergy. Great price, easy to use. Thanks, Moti.
Andrew, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Same here. Bye. Bye, everyone.